Third hour of 3D on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great start to your week. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick with you. Predators will leave tomorrow for Vancouver, tomorrow afternoon. That will kick off the three-game road trip up in Western Canada. It'll be Vancouver Wednesday night, Edmonton Thursday night, Calgary on Saturday evening before returning home against Winnipeg and Carolina the following week. Scary moment in practice today with Kyle Turris, number 8 for the Predators.
Yeah, they put a video out. They were doing a drill. He was standing in front of the net, and it was a high shot that hit him in the side of the face. Hard to tell from the video where it caught him, but he left the ice, and there was a lot of concern immediately. That can be very dangerous, so keep your fingers crossed.
There's a shot of him on the bench. I mean, there's no blood, but it's red around his like temple area. So it doesn't look like it's his eye. It looks like more like the temple side of the head. But looking at the video, I don't see any blood or anything.
Yeah. Blood probably, you know, sometimes that can be, if it's just stitches, you know, that's one thing. It's the swelling. But if it hits the side of the head, sometimes you worry about how that can affect your equilibrium, things like that. So we'll have to see. Hopefully. It's hard to tell from the video how hard the shot was coming in and where it hit him, how much of the helmet hit it. So, again, too early to speculate, but certainly not what you'd like going into to a big road trip here. How about this?
Yeah, you couldn't see who made the initial shot. Looked like P.K. Subban was the first one to him. Forsberg was in the area, but I didn't see who. The video doesn't show who was the who had the initial shot. So hopefully everything is going to be okay with Kyle Turris. He's just too darn valuable.
Oh man,
for this team. I mean, he has been unbelievable since the trade. There's no getting around that. He makes everybody better. He's solid.
The Predators also recalled UC Saros, who played two more games for Milwaukee. And evidently from people who saw the game yesterday, they thought he was outstanding in that game. So, with the back-to-backs coming up on this road trip, you figure Saros will probably get a start in there, and hopefully he can continue to be successful. Other than that, we'll see. How about this trade, Darren? Well, we're still waiting for Vince. Let me know when we get Vince on there. We'll certainly talk Big Orange here in the first week of Jeremy Pruitt on the job. What about this trade of Giancarlo Stanton to the Yankees? This is getting a lot of talk around the baseball world because,
as it should,
it's such a massive contract. There are massive contracts out there. His is not the only one, but the Marlins appear to have just basically said, here, take this contract. And they get very little in return. Starlin Castro and a couple, it's not a baseball trade. It's an economical trade. And there are those, I mean, Derek Jeter, I think, is trying to defend it by saying this is the best way for us to get better, is to have that money available to go sign other players, go about it a different way.
Well, let's put it in perspective. It's $295 million. And for the Marlins, that's what he still owed. That's a ton of money.
And you knew the moment he signed that contract that that was going to be an issue for them.
Of course.
And the Marlins, quite honestly, in the past have done this before. They have stripped it down, built it back up, and they've won two world championships.
But when they stripped it down, they would get major talent in return, right? They would trade
They
would dangle out
the
big golden carrots, and they would get massive young talent in return, which would grow up and turn into a team that would eventually win the World Series, and then they tear it back down again. You're not getting massive talent for this trade. You're just shedding yourself of $295 million. Now, maybe the Marlins spin and Derek Jeter spin is, well, that then allows us to get more bodies in there that can help us win rather than just one body. And maybe Derek Jeter and the Marlins feel like Stanton, maybe that was his ceiling. Maybe that was just a magical year, and that's not what it's going to look like
forward. He has been hurt a lot. He was outstanding last year.
The year before that, he was not.
I still would have thought. And maybe Derek Jeter is getting some heat right now, even from Yankee fans who are, you know, the Yankees, I think, are pretty happy to have Stanton, no question. the Yankees are still also trying to shed a lot of payroll, which sets the tone for these winter meetings that are going to be going on here. But the question is, could the Marlins have gotten – remember, Stanton had to agree to be traded too. They couldn't just trade him to anybody. But that's all you could get? That's all you can
well,
get?
Well, for $300 million, what do you expect? You're taking $300 million off the
Marlins,
box.
By the way, had to pay $30 million. You know, they had to give the Yankees a bit of a discount and say, we're even – just to take this contract, we'll pay you $30 million of it.
Which still is a drop in the bucket compared to what's left.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. And he can opt out too, which is another –
well,
in a couple
2020.
Years. Yeah.
All right, let's go east. Let's go to Knoxville. Let's bring in – Vince Ferrara, WNML, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Good, guys. Hope you're doing well. Rested up a little bit post-coaching search, so it went well. Hope you guys had a good one also.
Really cool. You know, for all the pitfalls and negative comments you can make about social media, really cool things can also happen on social media. And the Keaton Jones video, the young man from Knoxville, really cool to see how that thing has gone viral, and man, he is a celebrity now.
Yeah, people have reached out to him from all facets of life and the world, and it's been incredible. I think some of the Tennessee football players were the first to jump on board and support him. Tyler Burr, Jerry Garantano, and many others. Of course, you guys know about the Titans and what they've done in reaching out to him, and yeah, everyone from the director of Toy Story 3 to you name the artist and singer and Snoop Dogg and many others. So it.
Yeah, I was gonna say at this point you can just say everybody's reached out to him.
I tell you, I think that is a tremendous gesture, and I think Keaton Jones and I certainly admire what's happened here, and let's hope he's gonna get the reaction. And the school react, and everybody in the community react. I hope, too, that what comes from this.
Do you think Stars can use something like this? This is probably huge for them,
well,
right?
Stars is a big has a big campaign, and has for a long time. Move to Stand is their anti-bullying campaign that they've had for years. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping this creates awareness for everybody in every middle school, because those middle school years are tough. You know, I think if we all think back, we can think when we were at that age – that bullying was out there. And so if this helps call awareness to it and has people rethinking how they react around bullies, standing up to bullies, not just standing by while somebody's getting bullied, I think that's really where Keaton Jones can be a hero. Not just that he's going to start getting treated better and the attention he's getting, but the influence he's going to have on everybody else who sees this and says, you know what, nobody should be treated that way.
Well, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, another subject that's going on right now in sports and politics. It's a powerful thing. And now women feel empowered to come forward. And so maybe this can, same deal. People that are getting bullied, maybe this will empower them to come forward and say, enough is enough. You can't do this to me.
It's okay to speak out. It's okay to tell your story.
Yes.
And let people know. And it's not okay to just stand by and be afraid to let someone know that someone else is in these situations. And people with influence, and we're seeing it more with all protests and different things in sports. Now people that have a platform are using it for other things to try to help society. So I think this is another one where hopefully everyone in those spots that have helped him out can make a difference in those areas.
So, okay, we sit here on this Monday. It's been an interesting ride for the last couple of weeks. What's it been like since the press conference on Friday? Kind of what's been the reaction there in Knoxville?
Overall, pretty positive. I think part of it was the trust in Philip Fulmer and the fact that it looked like now they cleared all the cooks out of the kitchen and the head chef stepped back into the kitchen and said, all right, I got this. I know what you want to eat, and I'm going to make you the best meal possible. And I think that's what Chef Fulmer did. And it looked like it was his search, and he fit a lot of the criteria that Philip Fulmer was looking for. So the trust level in Philip Fulmer, plus people seeing the and learning about more about him and his winning background, his ability to recruit, being a relentless competitor, all these things that are very positive that I think have fans pretty excited, especially considering what they've been through to land with a guy that can potentially change their culture, develop players like he has, put together a heavy, heavy SEC staff of guys he has relationships with. I think these are all things that are exciting the fan base right now, and it's turned all the negativity back to fresh start. We got our AD. We got a coach that knows how to win. Let's recruit and let's roll. And I think Tennessee needed that considering how the season and the weeks afterwards went.
What did you think about Jimmy Haslam's comments over the weekend? I mean, that was bizarre, to say the least. I mean, driving home the point, I had nothing to do with this hire. What can we read into that?
Well, I posed that to when I was on our afternoon show with Jimmy Himes, and he said that his involvement was they asked him about the Schiano deal, and he approved of it, as did Peyton Manning. But nothing, I mean, is he saying nothing in terms of the vetting of candidates and things like that? I guess that would be okay. But when you say nothing, it's interpreted as absolutely nothing, no conversations, no nothing, literally nothing. That's the way it's interpreted. And if he meant it otherwise, then he misspoke, because there's no way that he had literally nothing to do with that process. So it just, maybe he meant something else and he said nothing, but that can't possibly be true.
Was he trying to distance himself from Jeremy Pruitt and say, hey, I didn't approve of this? Or
no.
Is he trying to tell us that he's kind of getting pushed to the back burner?
No, he wasn't involved in the second half of the search after Curry. When Philip Fulmer was put in as AD, it was, hey, we're going to do this in-house with Philip Fulmer that's here, that's going to run the show. And there wasn't going to be a pulling back and forth from Jimmy Haslam. And I don't even know how much Peyton Manning really was involved in it. They may have reached out to him and just to ask him his opinion also. But I think this was a search now run by Philip Fulmer and not by a bunch of people chiming in like it was before with Curry. So I think the setup was already there, and therefore I don't think he was involved in this part of it.
If anything, Vince, this is going to solidify what I've been saying for a good while about UT. Too many cooks in the kitchen, weak leadership. You cannot win. You cannot be successful with those elements in play. And to me, I feel like Philip Fulmer is about to stabilize all of that and fix a lot of those problems, because it seems like he is in control.
He is, from that standpoint, absolutely. When you have too much involvement from outside your university, I don't think it's ever a good idea. And there's plenty of other donors that probably feel like, hey, why did his voice get heard and not mine? I'm going to pull my money back. Now you have one in the family that's in that position that can bring the fans together, can bring a lot of the donors together, not for a voice, but now for the right reasons to help the university out. And I think because you could get a seat at the table before, I think the financial backing was for a voice as opposed to I want to help out my university best I can. Now that they know that it's Philip Fulmer is going to make those decisions with the blessing of the president and chancellor, I think it's a much better system. It's a cleaner system. And here's another thing: within the athletic department, there's been a whole lot of dissension through the years, going back to Mike Hamilton, Dave Hart. And I think Philip Fulmer, who has Tennessee's best intentions in mind, I think he can try to bring more of a family atmosphere within the athletic department and do things better. There's a lot of positives to it. And then obviously the fan trust in him they have as well. That calmed the waters big time in this search, and they were more accepting of Jeremy Pruitt. I'm not saying Philip Fulmer isn't going to make mistakes. He likely will, but I think there's a different level of trust moving forward, and the whole system is a lot cleaner with this restart with him in that AD spot.
I've heard a lot of names being tossed out there. Heck, I put one out there last week. It seemed like they're all true, but I mean, how do you – it's critical what his staff looks like. How do you think his staff is going to be comprised on both sides of the ball?
Based on knowing that their guys are out recruiting, we know some of their staff already.
Yeah.
Because they're representing Tennessee in going out and visiting prospects, and they're doing a lot of work. So we know that Will Friend, who's been at Colorado State, he's coming on board. Tyson Helton was the quarterback's coach at USC. So they get a USC coach, but it's not T. Martin.
Isn't that amazing? And the one is the head coach's brother, younger brother.
Right.
Which is strange.
And Tyson Helton actually worked under Jeff Brohm at Western Kentucky. So Brohm, who was almost Tennessee's coach, now the guy that worked with him is on the staff. Terry Fair, who is a former Vol, he's been Colorado State's defensive backs coach, a rising young coach. That's the UT representation. They also are holding over Robert Gillespie. He'll coach the running backs, and I think there's a good chance he could get a recruiting coordinator title as he has had before. He was by far the most deserving of any of the Butch Jones coaches to remain on staff. Kevin Shear coming over from Georgia. He will likely do what Jeremy Pruitt's doing, and that's being with his team through the playoffs and then come back after the dead period, after their season is over. Chris Rump, who's been at a bunch of SEC schools, big-time defensive line coach, develops players and can recruit. And then Tracy Rocker, who you guys know really well, bit with the Titans, a number of SEC schools, a really good defensive line coach. Those are the ones we know about. There's also been some talk of Chris Wenke, who has been on Alabama's off-field staff, great developer of quarterbacks. I think that would be a huge get if you can add Chris Wenke, Brian Niedermeyer, off-the-field staffer as well. Still a couple more spots to fill. And remember, they're going to expand the on-field coaching staff to 10 in January. So they'll be probably two-part in announcing their coaching staff. But those are the names we know about that are already working recruiting for Tennessee.
Chris Wenke, by the way, not only a former Heisman Trophy winner, a former Knoxville Blue Jay at the AA level back in the day. And, of course, I was in the minor leagues.
Well, he's 50
in the Blue
now,
Jays.
So he's been around for a while.
He's not 50.
He's not?
He's not 50. He's getting close. He's getting close.
I don't know if that's
a little-known fact, Vince, that you could, if you look up, he was a very good prospect, first baseman, in the Blue Jays chain, and he got as high as AA, and it was right around that time that he just looked up and he saw the pathway sort of blocked, and then he turned his attention to football. At that point, as we know, he's 28 years old when he won the Heisman.
Mm-hmm. Is Pruitt like going to run Is Pruitt going to run the defense?
Well, that's a good question. I think a first time head coach in his position is going to have so much new. I think that might be tough. Especially because whoever he names as defensive coordinator would not have called plays before on defense. Also, whoever their offensive coordinator will be, if it is indeed Tyson Helton, he hasn't solely called plays before either. So now you have a first-time head coach, first-time play callers on both sides of the ball. Now, they haven't officially told us those roles, but Jeremy Pruitt's going to have so much more to deal with. He might start out in that role, but I think it would be very, very tough for him to do. And there's also a co-defensive coordinator possibility too. So he will have his hands all over that defense, there's no doubt. But in terms of calling the defense down in, down out, that would be very difficult for him to do. I just don't know right now, but I think that would be tough.
Shea Patterson has made it official. Mm-hmm. The former Ole Miss quarterback will transfer to Michigan. He will be he will join Jim Harbaugh as the new Wolverines quarterback. And it looks like Memphis offensive coordinator, according to some reports I've seen on Twitter, Memphis offensive coordinator Daryl Dickey will be Jimbo Fisher's OC at Texas A&M. So those are some things coming down the pike. All right, we'll come back more with Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. We'll talk more Vols with him next on 3D. Philip Fulmer taking to the hardwood over the weekend, trotting out Jeremy Pruitt at the basketball game. Vols taking on Lipscomb. Back here on 3D, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, alongside Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville. And, yeah, by the way, speaking of, Willie, I don't know if you're going there, so I don't want to – basketball. I know there's been a lot of stuff with football, but basketball's off to a really, really good start. They look pretty darn good. Way better than the media picking them 13 out of 14 in the SEC.
Well, it also tells you the league is better. The league is deeper than it has been in years. You agree, Vince?
I do. Although the SEC had three teams in the top 10, and Florida and Texas A&M have taken some bad losses as of late. Florida's dipped all the way down to 22. A&M dropped to ninth. So, yeah, both of those programs kind of brought the SEC's image within the non-conference down a little bit. Still four ranked teams. Tennessee is the third highest ranked SEC team right now, even higher than Florida after their phenomenal start. The 13th thing is something that the players talk about all the time, the media, the fans talk about all the time, and it's just something that's going to be a chip on their shoulder all year. But that was really not paying attention if you had them 13th in the league. I thought that was silly. I thought they'd be middle of the pack. They're even better than I thought they would. They're deep. They have better post play than they did a year ago. They're better defensively, better offensively. They were leading the SEC in assists going into Saturday's win over Lipscomb, and they had 22 assists in that game as well. So that'll probably only go up. And they're winning games even when they're not playing their best. And those are things that they weren't able to do last year. They would lose games where they didn't play well. That just shows you the improvement they've made.
Vince, I agree with you. I think everything you said is right on, and I think they were kind of underrated coming into the season. I also thought, just on a local note here, I watched a lot of the game against Lipscomb. Lipscomb's a pretty good team. They've already beaten Belmont twice. Belmont has beaten both Vanderbilt and Middle Tennessee. Middle Tennessee thrashed Ole Miss over the weekend. I think that bodes well for Tennessee. That win is probably better than it might appear to some in Knoxville who are more of the casual fans.
There's no doubt, and they did a good job for a good part of the game on their leading scorer in Garrison Matthews, one of the top scorers in the country. And Rick Barnes complimented them afterwards and said they were really tough. They can shoot, play smart basketball. And Tennessee has defensive answers. They did. They changed guys that would defend Matthews, their top scorer, and I think that's a sign of what they can do moving forward. I don't know, Willie, where does Lipscomb in the, if you rank basketball teams, college basketball teams in on the FBS level in the state of Tennessee, where would Lipscomb fall on that list?
It's pretty intriguing because of who's beaten who. A lot of them play each other, which is something we're really excited about. We've mentioned that a bunch on the show, that a lot of the teams in this area are not afraid to play each other, even go to the other team's gym. But I think Lipscomb's two wins over Belmont are pretty impressive. And I think Lipscomb has a legit shot to win their conference and go to the NCAA tournament for the first time. I think they had a decent shot last year. They got a lot of guys back. I think they are right there.
Well, I don't think it's an accident that Rick Barnes finds these types of teams to challenge himself with and challenge the team in preseason. Even the teams that don't have maybe the big national names and the brands, and obviously they've got some of those teams too, but he likes to play teams that are contenders in their conference, in whatever conference they're playing, and not afraid to play the regional teams too. He wants to play any and everybody. And even if you look back, the resume is only getting better, because when you look back at the tournament in the Bahamas, Villanova's moved up to number one So now Tennessee's lone loss on the year is to the current number one team in the country. And guess what? They had the number seven team in the country coming up on Sunday in what will be a Checker Thompson Bowling Arena game. And those have been few and far between that they've pulled those off. But they're going to do it again. It's sold out. Just a huge opportunity for this program to be able to notch a win against an elite program like North Carolina at their place.
It's a good point. I think the league as a whole has done a much better job of scheduling. They've come light years, mm-hmm. and that's helping the league a lot. Vince, let's talk recruiting here for a moment. What's the latest on how the coaching change and, you know, everybody that's been trying to stay out there and keep guys in the fold? Where does it sit right now?
Well, overall, very positive. And there were big-time prospects that were tweeting out Thursday night, not that long after Jeremy Pruitt's introductory press conference, that they were excited to get an offer from Tennessee. One of the top receivers in the country that looked like he was headed to Alabama, and Jacob Copeland, he is one of them that's in the mix. They've got there's a running back, Brandon Cahill from Nevada, who is actually a linebacker that plays running back. He's a BYU commit, a four-star. So just a number of those guys that are Tennessee really wasn't in the mix for, that quickly Jeremy Pruitt has gotten back into the fold. And maybe the second most important one is Alante Taylor, who is one of a long list of decommits from this class. He's a talented wide receiver in-state and from Coffee County, and he canceled his visit scheduled for next weekend at Louisville to return to Tennessee after visiting Tennessee this weekend. That's significant. Now, they weren't able to do that with Cade Mays. Cade Mays is a five-star offensive lineman from Knoxville Catholic. He is still scheduled to go to Georgia this coming weekend, which will be the final weekend prior to the early signing period, December 20th through the 22nd. Now, kids aren't mandated to sign at that time, but there are plenty that would like to get it done and out of the way. So many are viewing these visit weekends as the final opportunity to make a difference, because you don't know if a kid is going to decide to sign or be influenced by another school. So Tennessee is trying to cash in on these last two weekends. They had six kids, including Taylor, in this weekend. One of them that came to visit, Brandon Cross, a defensive back from Orlando, a three-star, he actually decommitted from Tennessee this morning. When you read his tweet and what was in it, he thanked everyone but Jeremy Pruitt and the current staff. He just says it didn't work out the way he thought it would, the visit, which tells me that the coaching staff maybe encouraged him to go another direction if they didn't evaluate him the same way. They're going after some big-time players. So that stuff is going to happen. It sucks for these kids this late in the process, but this early signing period is pushing the envelope on these situations. And these kids feel like they're late in the process. They're forced to have to change course, and they don't have to sign right now, but a lot of them want to. So this is a whole new deal in working with this early signing period. Overall, though, they're getting in the mix for a lot more big-time prospects, and I think you will see a big jump in Tennessee's rankings, maybe not right away, but by the time you get to National Signing Day.
What about this number one JUCO tight end in the country? I guess the kid at Arizona Western. Where's Tennessee? He's put out there on Twitter that he's been offered by them, but a lot of people still feel Alabama is the favorite. Where are they on him? Do you know anything about him?
Not specifically. I know that he was excited to have Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt's staff in the mix for him and interested in him, but nothing in terms of insight with him specifically. I know there's a number of guys like an Auburn commit and Cornus Miller. I mentioned the BYU commit. Britton Cox is another guy to look for. He was a guy that's committed to Ohio State. He's from Georgia. This just shows an example of Jeremy Pruitt getting in the mix. He was committed to Ohio State till recently, and then he decommitted. His top recruiter at Alabama was Jeremy Pruitt. His top recruiter at Georgia was Kevin Shearer, both of them now on the Tennessee staff. So now they're working on trying to get in on another defensive lineman like Britton Cox. So they need tight ends for sure. They need all everything right now, but no specifics on him exactly.
Vince, let's leave on this one. There's an article, and I'm sure you've seen it. It was in the Knoxville News Sentinel. Rachel Ohm, cost of UT coach search in flux, but likely millions. And they go through person by person what's out there, the buyout of Butch Jones's staff, the John Curry contract situation, and the speculation of what will happen with Greg Schiano in the aftermath of everything. Who's working on that behind the scenes? What have you guys been able to uncover on what the likely price tag will be?
Well, the latest development on at least the Greg Schiano part of it was that Jimmy Himes from our station got the contract bylaws for UT are. And according to that, the memorandum of understanding must be signed by UT's president or their chief financial officer, which is a different twist than many were thinking. And there were only the signatures of John Curry and Greg Schiano on that MOU. Therefore, if that is in fact accurate, then according to the UT bylaws, that would be invalid. Now, that doesn't mean that the Schiano camp isn't still going to try to go through this and try to get some money, maybe settle and cash in on this. So those are hard to really determine where you're going to end up paying or how much you're going to end up paying from that standpoint. There's also the John Curry standpoint. They're trying to pursue firing for cause. Where is that in their investigation and how much they have on their side to be able to do that? Plus, they could very well be messy. Curry was passed over for another AD job because of that pending situation with Tennessee. So that's another indication that they know that this could be an ugly ongoing thing if schools won't touch John Curry as an AD, even though many say he still has a good reputation. And then there's the contracts of coaches that end up getting other jobs. Bob Shoup at Mississippi State is one example. You would expect a couple of others to get other jobs. How much do you bring down the dollars on what they owe from the previous coaching staff? So it's a moving target, but that's the work to this point in the total dollars that are going to cost them. It's going to be expensive, no doubt, but where that target ends up landing still will for sure fluctuate.
Big win for the Lady Vols, beating number two Texas.
Yeah, I was there, and they're legit. This is Holly Warlick's best team, and their freshmen all contribute. They're all just big-time, hardcore competitors. They play hard. Not only are they competitive, but overall they're very smart. Vina Westbrook is an elite passer. Jamie Nard is playing like a first team All-American, not all SEC All-American. She's that good, no holes in her game. They're the best team that I've seen being in Tennessee since 2010, and it starts with the different mindset of the freshmen, and then having experienced players like Nard and Russell. They're undefeated. They moved up to number 7 in the polls after beating number 2 Texas, and that might be the only, on the women's side, that might be the only SEC top 10 win to this point. And at least it was going into last week. The SEC hadn't beaten another top 10 team around the country, so it's either one or two, and Tennessee's got that. A really good team for Holly Warlick, and they'll have some other top 25 opponents coming up in their schedule the next few weeks.
Did I just hear you say if they don't get to the Final Four, it would be a bust? That would be a huge disappointment. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, the unofficial bar of expectation via Vince Ferrara. Yeah, I think that's what I ended up doing. And now I think it's Elite Eight, Final Four. Still haven't seen a number of the top programs around the country to compare them to. But, yeah, the bar is going to continue to rise, and How much does that impact this team? I don't know that it'll impact the freshmen. How it impacts Holly Warlick, that's maybe a different question. We will get the answer.
Good stuff as always. Hey, have a great week.
You guys do the same. Appreciate it.
Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Always appreciate him joining us at noon every Monday. He has great information. Back to wrap up the third hour of 3D next. We talked earlier. By the way, we will have Predators' Colton Sissons kick off the fourth hour with us tomorrow. They leave for Western Canada. And along those lines, so Colton coming up at 1 o'clock, we talked about how social media can be good and it can be bad. And talking about the Keaton Jones, the young man in Knoxville who's in, I think, middle school, and the bullying video that went viral, and I mean viral, everywhere. That's some of the good that happens with social media. Now, there was another social media incident that happened Friday night, ironically, at Bridgestone Arena. Willie, I'm sure you're aware of this. And the Vegas Golden Knights, who are kind of cutting edge when it comes to social media, they have been in hot water before. And look, I think everybody, more times than not, we get kind of the Butch Jones Twitter accounts from especially an entire organization. And so sometimes it's refreshing when you get something a little bit outside the box. But it doesn't mean you don't have a line. You still have a line. You can be different, and you can be, as you like to say, Willie, cutting edge.
Edgy, yeah.
Feisty. But there's still a line, okay? You're not a comedian. You don't get a hall pass and say, well, I'm a comedian. I don't have any lines, right? We can be, we can do whatever we want. We're comedians. And we have found out, by the way, comedians have lines too. Comedians have paid a hefty price for going too far with something, when we thought that they are the ones that truly get the pass. But the Vegas Golden Knights tweeted out on Friday that the Nashville media was standing and clapping after a Predators goal. And folks like Jim Diamond and others, the national media, took exception to it and really went after Vegas, because you don't do that. You don't call out people for something, especially if it's not true, if it's not accurate.
And something that is clearly a violation if it does happen. It's like,
of course, it's a no-no.
Yeah, it's not just kidding somebody. It's accusing them of, you know, something that does cross the line. It is very accepted practice that you do not cheer for either team in a press box. You don't do it.
I'll never forget. Well, you didn't go. Now that I think, did you go to Canton? Back in 2008?
I didn't stay for the game. I was there, but it left before the game.
Oh, okay. So this happened during the game.
It was my daughter's birthday. Okay. So I came back the day of the game.
Chris Mortensen cheered in the press box.
For his son?
For that game. And his son, of course, went in for the Titans. At quarterback, remember, he was in their camp. And he cheered after completion. And it was like, oh, my gosh.
Chris Mortensen.
Chris, I mean, very loud. It's like, man, you, Chris Mortensen, you're on an ad. You know better than that. You can't. Very next play, threw a pick. Pick six to the Bills. It was the Titans and the Bills in the Hall of Fame game in Canton.
Okay, but that would be one where maybe you would
maybe
excuse
you get
that.
A pass because it's your kid. But still, it's a no-no.
Right.
But, for example, if you haven't been following the Vegas Golden Knights, just to kind of put in perspective what they do. Like, their first game of the season was against Dallas, their first ever game. And I believe there was a call or a goal that was reviewed. And they said, yeah, 18 years late on a Dallas Stars goal being reviewed. Of course, that was taking a shot at their Stanley Cup final when they won the cup. And so that's kind of fun.
Right.
Like, that you get that. Like, that's different.
They
right?
ripped on the Canadians for most of their Stanley Cups came when they were only six teams in the league.
Right.
You know, they did
they
stuff
like to
that.
Do so. That's not your standard, typical speaking for a franchise or an organization stuff. So okay, ha ha ha, it's a little different.
All in good fun, but you can't cross the line. You have to know where the line is.
And they have crossed the line already this year several times and been called out for it. This is not their first hiccup, and so Jim Diamond and a lot of others, the Nashville media, just flat out called for them to give a public an apology. Now, they went Saturday. By Saturday morning, the tweet had been deleted by the Vegas Golden Knights on their
Twitter
account.
Friday
was it
night.
Friday night?
Yeah, late Friday night. I was following it.
Okay.
They eventually did delete it.
I thought it.
It
was Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was within a few hours after the game, it was gone. And they eventually did apologize, correct?
Now, Jim Diamond is with the Associated Press, and he's a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. And so he called immediately for an apology and a retraction from Vegas Golden Knights and sent them an email. And like I said, they deleted the Twitter account, but that wasn't good. And so, sure enough, I think it was early Saturday afternoon, because I was kind of tracking this story, the Golden Knights did publicly apologize for it.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to find the actual tweet.
They had a lot of writers.
We apologize for our comment that insinuated members of the Nashville media were cheering in the press box during our game Friday. We have a great deal of respect and admiration for the press and the PWHA and are sorry that their integrity was called into question. We have addressed the matter with the PWHA and internally with our staff.
They had a lot of hockey writers responding to Jim, all calling for Vegas to do the right thing in the aftermath of it. You know, and after a while, it gets kind of, you know, if you're repeatedly doing this, if you do it one time and you apologize, okay. But if you're repeatedly crossing the line
and having
then,
to apologize.
And then apologize, then you know somebody needs to say something internally at Las Vegas and say, guys, let's find the right line here. Let's go to the line. Let's not cross the line.
Remember when they played the Bruins, they had mocked their accent, and they just kept going on, and they eventually apologized for that. And you're right. It starts to fall on deaf ears if constantly it's like, well, are you really sorry? Because if you're constantly apologizing, then you're constantly going over the line and you're taking things too far. And so, therefore, should we really accept your apology? Have you really learned anything from this? Like, for example, I think Nash is funny on Twitter. I mean, he's not your standard mascot Twitter account.
Right.
I mean, he says things and you're like, whoa. But like I said, there's still a line. Everybody has a line. You can be different. It's okay to be different. You don't have to be cookie cutter and standard and boring Sean Monahan, which is a funny Twitter account. You can be different, but there still is a line. You can't do stuff like that.
And
they took it too far.
The more that you're wanting to be out there and edgy and all that stuff, the more you have to know where that line is.
Well, if somebody was clapping in the press box on Friday, you better make damn sure you know who it is.
Exactly.
Before you accuse somebody. You
Absolutely.
Better do your homework, and you better find out exactly who it is before you send out that tweet.
Well, I admire Jim and the media for standing up for themselves, and you saw the entire NHL media came to their defense and called him out.
Oh, the national media started ripping on Vegas
Absolutely.
Because they have a history of doing this stuff.
That's what their Twitter account is. I'm glad somebody called
it
him
doesn't,
out.
It doesn't make it exciting. It doesn't matter. You still have a line.
Yeah.
You cannot cross it. Can be funny and you can be different, but you still have a line. And when you start accusing people of something that didn't happen, you're in the wrong.
I agree.
Period,
I was waiting for
line.
The moment for them to cross the line, and they did it.
We'll come back. Colton Sissons of the Predators to kick off the fourth and final hour of 3D. That's next.